Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. Sign Guy and QT with you like normal. And I want to bring our guest on right away today. We are absolutely thrilled to have with us Jack Victory. Jack Victory, welcome to our show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for still thinking about old-timers like myself.
Oh, absolutely. And since today is your first time on our show, we're going to start you out with the first-timer's question we always ask. What led to you getting into the business of pro wrestling?
Oh, God, I think I've probably told this story a thousand times, but it never gets old. I grew up in New Jersey, and I grew up watching the WWF, and, just like any wrestling fan, when you're growing up as a young kid, you keep telling yourself that that's what you want to do for a living. What are you going to do when you grow up? I'm going to be a professional wrestler. So, I graduated right around, 1982. And I hooked up with a couple wrestling organizations that were based out of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. I was self-taught. I never went to a wrestling school. I don't know if you guys have heard of DC Drake and Eddie Miranda. Ted Petty was out there, and basically we did shows in Eastern Pennsylvania and all around New Jersey. And every time I had a match, I would film it. And back then it was VHS tapes. And one day my dad came home and he says that he found out where Nature Boy Buddy Rogers lived in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And he says, "Do you want to go?" And I said, "Oh, hell yeah." So just like a mark, we actually went to his house, knocked on his door, and he was really, really, really nice and invited me in. And I just asked him for advice. How would you go about getting a hold of all these other territories that I was interested to go work for? And he actually got me into contact with four or five organizations, and the one that really actually hired me when I was really young was Mid-South Sports. Was Bill Dundee was the booker, and Bill Watts was the owner. And that's basically how I'm sitting here talking to you right now. It was a weird story, and people get a kick out of it, but that's how my career started.
Definitely a unique start in that era, I think. Now, the first time I recall watching you was for the UWF, which was what Mid-South Sports became
they
went national.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, they. That's when. That was pretty later in the equation. I was with Mid-South probably a good year and a half before Bill went to the UWF. I think I even went to World Class in between that, and I came back to the UWF with Johnny and Missy. I think that's how it went. The Watts saw the writing on the wall where he was going to have to compete with Vince and everybody else because everybody started crossing over to everybody's territory. Where, you know, before I started, when I started, you really never had that crossover. You know, you never, there was signed territories, signed locations, and you never really fringed on anybody else's turf. I think, you know, cable TV had a lot to do with broadening the range of going into other parts of the country.
Now, the territory that Watts had has kind of been infamous as far as the travel. I know you worked for a lot of places that had a lot of travel involved in it in the territory days because you mainly drove. You have also made a lot of trips to different parts of the country and I'm sure to several different countries. What would be the farthest trip that you've ever had to make?
Well, it goes back to the Watts territory. You would work 8 shows a week. Monday through Friday would be single shows, and Saturday and Sunday you would have double shots. You would have an afternoon show and a night show. You literally were working 8 matches a week. So you learned how to wrestle really, really fast and really, really quick. There was sometimes where Bill would book things so far away that you would have to literally stay in your gimmick wrestling gear, and you would have to work your match and literally get in your car and drive to make the night show. So we never flew anywhere in Bill's territory. It was always behind the wheel of a car. So there was some long, I'm talking times where you would have to, you know, wrestle that night and drive all the way through to the next day to get to that show the next night. It was crazy territory. I blew up a couple cars in that territory.
That was also the territory where I was first introduced to watching the Gilberts. And anyone that listens to this show knows I'm a huge fan of the Gilberts. They seem to be kind of instrumental in the success of the UWF's launch. Eddie was there, and also his father, Tommy. His brother, Doug, came in later on. What was it like working with the Gilbert family?
Oh my God, what great guys. Tommy, his dad was, what a character, man. I remember one show I was wrestling Terry Taylor, and Tommy, I think it was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I have Terry in the corner, and I'm not breaking my hold. I'm choking him. I'm kicking him, and Tommy got pissed off at me, and I hear the bell ring, and I'm like, oh no, and I turn around and I go, what happened? He goes, you wouldn't break your hold, so I DQ'd you. And it was the first time anybody's ever really done something like that to me, and I laughed about it. But Grizzly Smith, he was Bill Watts's right hand man when and took care of all the house shows, he just shook his head when I went back to the dressing room. That was one of my Tommy things that I'll never forget. He was the only referee that ever DQ'd me off script. But Eddie, people just don't give that Memphis Torrey the credit that it deserves, because with Lawler, Bill Dundee, and Eddie Gilbert, they were masterminds on so many gimmick matches, you know, that that you can still see today. Eddie was I don't have to tell you this. He was a fantastic worker, fantastic mind for the business, all around good guy. His brother Doug, he came in later on, just like you said, and awesome kid. So answer to your question, the Gilbert family was awesome. And we got to do a really good gimmick when Missy and Johnny broke up, and Eddie stole Missy from Johnny. So that was kind of fun.
I remember that very fondly. Missy once broke her thumb.
We actually did a signing in North Carolina a couple months ago, and me, Johnny, and Missy were back together for the first time in, oh God, probably 30 years. It was nice to see Johnny, and it was nice to see Missy. The fans really enjoyed it. He was hired by another guy to come in and do autographs. Missy was hired by another guy, and I was hired by another guy. So it wasn't where they brought us all in, but the three people got together and we did our own little session, which really went over well.
Later in your career, you wrestled for the original ECW, and they often got compared to Mid-South wrestling just as far as the style that they presented. You were there for both of them. Did you see much of a similarity between ECW and Mid-South?
ECW actually reminded me so much of Mid-South. ECW was a little bit more rough, a little bit more over-the-top gimmicky matches. But it still was the territory that was, you know, pretty snug, and you didn't mind, giving one and receiving one, just like Mid-South. You know, everything was snug back then. Back in the day, I mean, the heels and the baby faces didn't even share the same dressing rooms. You know what I mean? Where nowadays, you know, they're sitting in each other's laps, so it was crazy. But ECW, yeah, it reminded me. It was the closest thing to Mid-South. During two different eras. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Now, you also wrestle quite a bit in tag teams, and one of the partners you had in WCW was Rip Morgan as part of the New Zealand Militia. What was the process that made you into a New Zealander?
Well, I did the gimmick with the sheep herders way back in the day. I was their flag bearer, and Butch and Rip are related. That's his uncle. So we knew each other from that situation, and Rip was just a really, really great guy, and I really enjoyed tagging with him. We did two gimmicks. We did the Royal Family with Lord Littlebrook as our manager, and we also did the New Zealand Militia, and he was a great partner, great friend. It was a shame that he got homesick and went back to New Zealand. So we broke up after he left, and it was sad that he had he was going back home to get married. So, but anyway, we had a good run.
At any point in your career, did you ever actually wrestle in New Zealand?
I never. No, that's one place I've never been to. it would have been nice. It would have been nice to go over, but it just never worked out.
In that same general time frame, you also adopted the letter O as part of your name, and you were Jacko Victory. How did that come to be?
Oh, I don't know. It was I don't remember who called me that one time, and it just stuck. I was Jacko for I think Rip used to call me Jacko. And then everybody else started calling me Jacko in the locker room, and I think it just stuck, you know?
Makes sense. Now, in your career, you work with a lot of smaller guys that were doing a lot of the quick, agile moves like drop kicks, and I know you wrestled tons of guys that had really, really great drop kicks, guys like Brad Armstrong, Bobby Eaton, Eddie Gilbert, countless others, I'm sure. Who would you say, out of all the people that you wrestled, had the best drop kick?
Right off the bat, Tommy Rogers of the Fantastics.
He had a beautiful one, for sure.
He did. He Brad had, I mean, Brad was close second. Brad would always, you know, he can throw a drop kick and almost land on his feet. That's how agile he was. I mean, it was, you know, poetry in motion. It was beautiful. I just remember wrestling the Fantastics and Tommy, man, he had a really nice drop kick.
During the course of your career, we didn't see you in a lot of territories that utilized lady wrestlers as regular features. They were more of an attraction at that point. Looking back on your career from the people that you worked shows with at that point, who would you say were some of the top lady wrestlers?
Worker-wise, they were more... In my day, they were more of a gimmick, but Medusa, she was a pretty good worker. Martel, she was a really good worker. Mostly everybody else. Sam Houston's little sister, she was pretty good too. And Jake's sister. She was pretty decent back then, but you know, there was really, when you look at it, when I was going through wrestling, there was really not that much wrestling girl-wise like there is today. You know, every other match is a girls' match nowadays. Back then, it was more of a gimmick, you know, valeting and cat fights and stuff like that. But those three actually stand out in my mind. I think in today's era, I think she's the most underrated female wrestler today is that Liv girl with WWF.
Liv Morgan.
Liv Morgan. I think she's one of the best workers up there, to be honest with you.
Al, you also worked a number of territories that had some of the greatest TV commentators calling the matches. You worked in territories that had people like Lance Russell, Jim Ross, Bob Caudle, Mark Lawrence, Gordon Solie, people like that. Did you have a personal favorite commentator that would call your matches that you enjoyed hearing do your match once it aired on TV?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not say Jim Ross. You know what I mean? It was he was there when I broke in at 18 years old, and you know, he's been around my career the most. Jim Ross. You know, it's very hard. You know, he was always will be one of the best. You know,
agreed. Now, as someone that has been to a lot of places in their career, most wrestlers have a particular favorite venue where they wrestled for whatever reason, whether it's the atmosphere of the fans or whether it's the accommodations in the building or just because it's in a certain location they enjoy. Did you have a particular favorite arena?
Favorite arena? I always liked wrestling down south more than I did up north. Now, Chicago area, that was a little different. They were pretty good rowdy fans, but I think just the fans down south have always been more passionate towards wrestling. Any one particular building? Not really. I know New Orleans. That's the only town, and I think it's because a girl probably put a curse on me in my early part of my career, because that's the only place that I broke my knee. I blew out my knee 3 times. I lost 6 teeth in New Orleans. So every time I got really bad injured, it was in New Orleans. But you talk about an awesome town. That's a great town. And I, you know, I wrestled in the Superdome a couple times, maybe 3 or 4 times in the Superdome. So that was pretty awesome too.
Now the Superdome shows usually were, from what people have said in recent years, pretty high paying spots. Did you notice that whenever you wrestled in New Orleans, even though you got hurt, that your pay was usually more than in other spots?
Yeah, he would always take care of us a lot. When you're putting four, you know, we never sold out like Vince. We'd always, you know, maybe 45,000 people around that range. But yeah, you would always enjoy working the Superdome, because you definitely got a nice bump in the pay.
We have a game on the show we like to play called Word Association. I'll just throw out the names of some people that you have come across in your career, and the first word or two that comes to your mind is the answer. Are you prepared for some word association?
Oh, boy, here we go. Okay, I'm ready.
All right, first name, Sweet Stan Lane.
Pretty.
Ricky Steamboat.
One of the best.
New Jack.
Crazy as hell.
Bob Caudle.
Don't know him very well. So I'm gonna have to pass on that one.
Okay. Teddy Long.
Awesome guy.
Savannah Jack.
Savannah Jack, I'll tell you, soft-spoken, nice guy. I mean, I know you told me to just say, but super great guy.
Steve Corino.
Love that man.
Lord Littlebrook.
Oh, my God. The best. My best gimmick. I love the Royal Family gimmick with Lord Littlebrook and taking him to the bars. I know I'm only supposed to say one word, but he was a great dude.
Jim Duggan.
Over.
Great Muta.
Didn't speak much English, but very good worker.
Joey Styles.
One of the best commentators, period.
Kevin Von Erich.
Weird.
The last name, Dark Journey.
Love that girl.
You mentioned that the gimmick with Lord Littlebrook and Rip was your best gimmick, but prior to that, you did a gimmick as Secret Service Jack Victory, and you were sort of the Secret Service agent slash bodyguard for a young Paul E. Dangerously.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any type of backlash from the actual Secret Service on that, or does it fly under their radar?
No, nobody came knocking on our door, which is great. You know, I'm sure they got a kick out of it. If there was any Secret Service works, you know, I'm sure they got a kick out of it. But that was a fun gimmick. That was a fun gimmick.
And when you're doing type of bodyguarding for a manager like that, did you find that was easier to do than wrestling a different type of gimmick, or was it just sort of a different skill set, but same type of preparation and so forth went into it?
Oh, same. Yeah, same. The gimmick was more of a TV gimmick. But when we went to shows and house shows, you know, I would still wrestle every night. You know what I mean? It was, that was more of a TV gimmick than it was me actually being his bodyguard at house shows. So it was, it was same preparation.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Now, in wrestling, unfortunately, over the years, we've lost a lot of people early due to previous drug use and things of that nature. We've cleaned up quite a bit, I think, over the last several years in that regards. You were around in a lot of different territories. When you were actively wrestling, did you notice any type of drug problem within the individual companies you were with, or was that something that you didn't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis?
No, you wouldn't really see on a day-to-day basis. You really didn't get into a lot of guys' personal business and stuff like that. I know, but by wrestling as much as we did, you really hurt. You know what I mean? And I could tell. A lot of guys, it didn't matter what territory you're in, you hurt the same, you know what I mean? And I know a lot of guys took pain medication to stop the pain, and I can see, you know, how they can get addictive. I never went down that route of the pain medication, thank God, but I've seen a lot of friends, you know, crash and burn on it, and it was just part of the business back then, because we worked so much. You know, when you're doing 8 shows a week, it tears you up body wise. The answer to your questions, no, I think it was across the wrestling business. I don't think any particular company had less, you know, meds and all that stuff than any other territory. I think it was equal all the way around.
You mentioned earlier one of the places you were wrestling was World Class, and they had a fan base that was extremely passionate, and whenever you saw a show from the Sportatorium in Dallas, it sounded like way more fans were in there than actually were, and they were into everything. Do you think that the World Class promotion may have had the most passionate fan base when you compare it to other territories, and you kind of take it as a, like, the audience size compared to the other audience size?
Now, world class. I mean, the Von Erichs were God. I mean, if Fritz would have ran for governor of Texas, I'm sure he would have won. I mean, he was. That family was over. I mean, that family could do no wrong. That family was over. They had some passionate fans. Don't get me wrong, but Mid-South was one and two. I mean, Mid-South and World Class probably, but one and two on passionate fans. I know in Texas, it was we didn't work 8 shows a week. We did probably about 5 shows a week. I know we did the Sportatorium on Friday nights. We did the Fort Worth tapings on Mondays. And then Saturday and Sundays, we did maybe 3 to 4 shows. We did a couple of double shots and stuff like that. But if you had a Von Erich on the card, it was almost a guaranteed sellout. It was amazing how over that family was. There was nothing like it. Like you said, if you asked me a question, what was the number one family in the wrestling business that had the biggest fan base? It would be the Von Erichs. They were God in Texas. Period.
If my memory serves me correctly, I believe you also had a bit of a run in the Global Wrestling Federation, which was also based out of the Sportatorium and had an ESPN show. What was the experience like in the Global Wrestling Federation?
That was Ken Mantell was the owner. I mean, Ken Mantell was the booker with Fritz and all that, and that was all during when territory started going away. Kenny, you know, he hooked up with ESPN. We did the taping was actually in the Fort Worth at the Stockyards. That's where we did Global. It was interesting. It just never took off.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know he has questions as well, so I'm going to give you over to him for a bit.
Okay.
Thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Mr. Victory.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing very good. Mr. Victory, could I expand on Sign Guy's word association with four wrestlers?
Okay, go.
Okay. The first one, Don Morocco.
Who?
Don Morocco.
He was before my time, but he was one of the ones that, you know, I looked up to. I mean, he was one of the ones that, you know, I watched growing up, but I never got to meet him and I never got to wrestle with him, which sucked.
Okay, I'm going to put down unseen mentor for your response.
That's awesome.
Okay, how about Mr. Fuji?
Hated him.
Oh, okay, hated.
But I was still a mark, though. I was still a mark back then. He was still before me, so he just got over as a heel. Very good.
All right. How about Haku?
Great friend.
Boy, you wouldn't want him as an enemy.
No.
Okay. Okay. And the last one, Steve Blackman. Blackman.
Tough.
Steve Blackman.
Tough.
Okay. Tough. All right. Okay, you did very good on the expanded word association. Very good.
Well, thank you. I've never really passed too many tests in my day, but thank you.
Okay. Well, Mr. Victory, I saw your World Championship Wrestling video on YouTube entitled March 17, 1990, Eddie Gilbert versus Jack Victory. Now, in this video, at the 1 minute and 57 mark, you made your entrance and followed Lord Littlebrook down to the ring, and the announcer said, "Introducing first, from the Queen's Court, Lord Littlebrook presents one half of the royal family." And my question is, what Queen's Court employed Lord Littlebrook?
I have no idea.
Oh. I was going to guess it was the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, or maybe the Earlets of Kent, or maybe the Royal Margaret of Wessex. One of those three.
I know. It had to be one of those three, or maybe all three. I don't know, but I just know I really, really liked Lord Littlebrook. He was quite a character.
Okay. Or he could have been the royal inscriber for the Duchess of Hanover. That was my other guess.
You're probably right.
Okay. Well, Mr. Victory, the announcer said you were also one half of the royal family, and indeed, you came out wearing a resplendent combination royal robe. Like Triple H, were you raised in the finest boarding schools of New England, where you were schooled in the finest ways of culture, prestige, nobility, and especially etiquette and refinement? Were you in a boarding school like Triple H?
That is a definitely hell no.
Oh, okay. Well, when you came out of the locker room and into the arena, was one of your first thoughts that hit you, was it, boy, this smells of hot dogs, Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, and cologne and perfume to cover up bathing habits that are only applied for 20 minutes each week? Was that one of your first thoughts?
It was definitely beer.
Oh, beer, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, Mr. Victory, the announcer said that Eddie Gilbert hailed from the aristocracy city of Lexington, Tennessee, and his entrance music was the song Hot Stuff by Donna Summer. My question is, were you a big fan of her other hits, such as Bad Girls in 1979 or I Feel Love in 1977?
I'm gonna hit a telephone pole listening to these questions. They're very great. I think the 79 one was much better.
All right. How about the song Love to Love You Baby in 1975, oh, or She Works Hard for the Money in 83?
Oh, Works Hard for the Money, definitely.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good. All right. Well, Mr. Victory, you locked up with Eddie at the 3 minute and 33 second mark of the video, and you immediately threw him back into the ropes. You clearly had the size advantage over him and most likely the edge in strength, although Eddie was no slouch in strength himself. Was it your plan to wear him down physically with a mat-based attack of holds to neutralize his high-flying speed?
No. Actually, my game plan was beat the crap out of him, but it didn't work out that way.
That's true, yes. Yeah. Oh, okay.
There was no wearing Eddie down. The only way to get an advantage on Eddie was to kick him right in the head.
Oh, the head kick, yes.
The head kick. Okay. That slows him down.
Okay. Well, Jack, at about the same time you were throwing Eddie Gilbert into the ropes after your first lockup, Jim Cornette was asking Jim Ross about a benefit coming up in Farmland, Indiana on a Thursday night. Jim Cornette asked Jim Ross, that's not one of those benefits that allows those redneck farmers to grow more corn or something, is it? And Jim Ross said, it might be. And Cornette said, well, I'm not going to let the Midnight Express be a part of that thing because I don't like farmers, especially in Indiana. My question is, did you go to this farmers benefit in Farmers Indiana following this match on that Thursday? That's my question.
I probably was there. I just don't remember it. That was many, many moons ago.
Oh, okay.
And I bet Cornette was there too, though.
Wow. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Well, Mr. Victory, you put Eddie Gilbert down with a straight right hand at the 3:57 mark of the match. My question is, were you schooled in the fine art of boxing and especially the Royal Marquess of Queensberry rules in the most culturally dignified boxing school of London, as compared to Mike Tyson of that time, who was schooled in the unrefined, street-connected, and mob-influenced boxing rings of Catskill, New York, under the coaching of commoner Cus D'Amato?
No, actually, I learned how to throw that right in many, many bar fights.
Oh, okay. So the Marquess of Queensberry rules and the finest boxing schools of London is out.
Okay. That was definitely out, yeah. It was more of the nightclubs at on Bourbon Street. That's how you learn how to throw a right.
Whoa, okay. All right. Okay. Well, Mr. Victory, can you tell us about the other half of the royal family, Rip Morgan, who I believe saw action later that night against Wildfire Tommy Rich?
Getting back to the question earlier in the interview, Rip Morgan was one of my dearest friends, always will be one of my dearest friends. Awkward wrestling American style. He learned how to wrestle over in England and in New Zealand area. So he was tough and rugged. Super great guy. I miss him every day. I wish we could go back 20 years and do it all over again.
Uh-huh. You see, now I'm very excited that you mentioned England. Is it true that he was going steady at the time with Princess Di? Any truth to those rumors?
I don't know. you seem to know a lot of stuff. So can you answer that question?
I don't think so. I don't think Princess Di. He may have been. That was even before text messaging, so I don't think he was involved with him.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, you're probably right.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Victory, at the 5:30 mark, Lord Littlebrook kicked a fallen Eddie Gilbert, who was outside the ring after he was down on the floor after an awkward knee collision with a barricade. Jim Ross speculated that Lord Littlebrook had a size 3 foot. My question is, did you indeed find out how big Lord Littlebrook's feet really were? That's my question.
Oh, that is so funny. I knew that he took baths in the sink of the hotel rooms. That's all I remember.
Oh, my. Okay. All right.
Yep.
Well, Jack, I'm somewhat of a video analysis expert, and I have a record on the show of 97 correct guesses, 4 incorrect guesses, and 2 draws on guessing a wrestler's height and weight. The specifics have to be I have to be within an inch of his height and 20 pounds or 25 of his actual weight and height. Can I now guess your height and weight based on the video I watched of you and put my record on the line?
And this one was against the match against Eddie Gilbert?
Eddie Gilbert, yes.
And you're gonna and how many inches is the height?
This is based on your March 25th 1990 match with Eddie Gilbert, and I'm gonna guess
okay.
your height, weight, and shoe size, and I'm gonna put my record on the line. Are you ready?
And my shoe size, okay. And you can miss it by how much?
I can miss your height by 1 inch, your weight,
okay.
25 pounds. And this is the
okay.
first time I've guessed a wrestler's shoe size.
All right, go for it.
All right. Based on what I saw, I'm going to guess you're 6 foot, 3 1/4 inch in height, 278 pounds, and you have a size 13 shoe.
You must have read that somewhere because you are pretty. I mean, you are. Dead on my shoe size. You're dead on my weight, and I'm 6'4", so you're dead on with that, too.
I am. I never have I been more pleased with myself.
you're almost like you read it somewhere.
Almost. Wow, that's great. Well, I was
yeah.
comparing your shoe size with Lord Littlebrooks. I give you that.
True.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Victory, you told Sign Guy earlier about the hectic schedule of doing about 6 shows a week and then getting in a car with your gear on. In their earlier days when they were just starting out as a band and they had to get in a van and travel to the next show, Gene Simmons of Kiss and Henry Rollins kind of undertook what you did in this hectic schedule. That was before they hit it big. Henry Rollins of Black Flag and Gene Simmons. They told a similar story.
Interesting. So
yes.
so we had a lot in common from a rock star.
Yes, although you were not the demon or star child like Ace Frehley.
true. That is very true.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now with Henry Rollins of Black Flag, he told a story once where they went into a fast food place with a salad bar. Greg Ginn, the guitarist of the band, took a plate and paid for one salad. He then proceeded to go to the salad bar, disregard the plate, and then proceed to heap a huge amount of salad and side fixings into the meal for five. The manager was bummed out, but there was not much he could do because Greg Ginn paid for the meal. This was like a coping mechanism for a band that was short on money. My question is, did you have any food stories from the road on a limited budget like Henry Rollins?
Not on a budget, no. I mean, wrestlers, they like to eat. I've had a story where Tommy Dreamer almost killed himself at an all-you-can-eat sushi bar. He had mercury poison because he ate almost 100 pieces of sushi.
Ooh, 100 pieces of sushi?
He had right at 100 pieces of sushi. It was in Florida down in oh, God, where was it? Down in Fort Lauderdale. It was a sushi bar that it was an all-you-can-eat place, and Tommy made me very proud that day.
Holy smokes. Mercury poisoning. Now, 100 pieces of sushi is very good. I think Andre the Giant could probably top that by a little bit, though. Don't you agree?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I heard some stories about that man. Yeah. Now, have you guys ever had Tommy Dreamer on your show?
We have
no,
not.
We haven't.
No. Okay, next time he's on your show, you got to ask him about his mercury poison sushi bar episode.
Ooh, instantly five questions about this come up in my mind, and it's wrestling related. Yes. Okay. Boy, that's okay. All right. Well, Mr. Victory, speaking of unfortunate food incidents, did you hear recently, a couple years back, about the Cauliflower Alley Club incident where some of the wrestlers got food poisoning? CAC.
I did not hear about that. I did not hear about that.
Oh, okay. All right. I think Sign Guy could fill you in on that later in a message or something.
I don't get invited to things like that. I don't know why, but they don't invite me to things like that.
Ooh. I tell you what, Mr. Victory, if you're ever out in the Pacific Northwest, Sign Guy and myself will invite you to an Arby's.
I'll tell you what, I think it was Oregon, but it was the only strip club that had the best steak. I don't remember the name, but you can literally go in a strip club and it was a steakhouse. Are you guys familiar on the one I'm talking about? I want to say it was in Oregon, but great strip club, great steak.
Well, there's a strip club near a wrestling venue that both Sign Guy and myself go to. It's called the Dancing Bear.
No, that don't sound familiar, but I would like to go to that one too.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big fan of strip clubs. Big fan.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah.
Okay. Well,
I keep wandering off of your questions. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. We're adapted. We're adapted to wander. Mr. Victory, at any time in your career, did Jim Cornette ever hit you with a tennis racket?
Never.
Oh, okay. Never. All right.
Never. Yep.
Mm. Okay. Well, Mr. Victory, in all these years that you have been interviewed by other podcast shows, have they given you any homework assignments?
No. No. And if they did, I would have never done it. I was never into the homework. I was never a good student of homework.
Oh, okay. And this leads into my next question. What was the name of your high school?
Central Regional High School in Bayville, New Jersey. If you're a baseball fan, me and Al Leiter graduated the same time, and Al was a World Series winner for the Yankees and the Marlins as a pitcher.
Wow. Okay.
So we grew up together. We graduated the same high school.
Okay, for the record, can I ask what your school colors were?
Garnet and gold. We were the Eagles. Central Regional Golden Eagles.
Wow. Okay, gold and what other color?
Gold and what the hell did I say?
I thought you said garnet.
Maroon and gold. That's it.
Oh, maroon. Okay. Very good. Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your mascot?
It was an eagle. Yeah, eagle.
Oh, okay. An eagle? Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Victor, you did very well on the answering our questions. And at this time, I'm turning it back to the three guys.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. Thank you, QT. Well, Mr. Victory, we got just a few minutes left on the program today, and I want to give that to you. If there's anything you would like to say to the fans listening today, if you want to plug or promote absolutely anything at all, floor is all yours.
I had a remarkable career, and I enjoyed every day I had in the business. Do I miss it? Absolutely. I think if you asked 100 wrestlers that were retired, do you miss the business? And I guarantee all 100 would say yes. So, you know, that's basically it. I was very blessed to be in that little percentage of guys that actually did this business.
Well, I want to thank you again for being on today. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on here. I have enjoyed you since I started watching wrestling many moons ago. Always enjoyed your work, and an absolute pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you, sir. You guys have a great day.
You too. Fans, definitely, if you've not watched a lot of Jack Victory on YouTube, go on there and watch him. He was fantastic. He did several different promotions, several different gimmicks, so get out there, do your research. We'll be back with you next week, next Friday afternoon. We have referee Sean O'Brien with us, and 1 week from today, Reno Riggins will be our guest. So make plans to be with us. Keep safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon.
Once a man is glad, you spoke like your grandmother. 200 days are down.